This is the Tom Likas Show.
You want to announce to the whole world that you're from New York?
Now, from New York City.
Do you people from New York can just shut up?
Tom Likas.
Thank you for tuning into the Tom Likas Show. From New York City, this is where you hear us live, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 24/7 at tom.show. You can hear us on our free app. Get it at the App Store. Get it at Google Play. Or get it at tomeverywhere.com. That's tomeverywhere.com. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for being part of the program. We appreciate it. Here we are together again, you and me, and another bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. And joining us in studio, here he is, criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Adam, always a pleasure.
Hey, great to be here, Tom.
What's going on?
You're in New York, eh?
I am.
I have my license there, just in case you get in any trouble.
Thank you. I've got you on speed dial.
Excellent. I got you covered, as always.
Good.
You know, there was this professor that was really obnoxious to me in law school, and I just got the alumni book, and it turns out that she died of a very slow-moving pancreatic cancer, so I'm very pleased.
Oh, my. Jeez.
Anyway, on that note,
yep.
You know, Tom, when I first started out, I was a child advocate, and I did a lot of work in terms of rights of children. We talk a lot on Criminal Day about DUI and adults and all this stuff, but I know we probably have a lot of listeners who are in college, and if not high school even, and I think it's really important that people recognize in terms of different situations that they still have a lot of normal rights even when they're at school. There's been a lot of cases now where we've talked about these girls making false accusations and stuff. Something interesting happened to one of the friends of my son. It was a high schooler where there's some, you know, stupid high school stuff and parents yakking, who said apparently he was talking about a friend of his who's got this other friend or something, and the mother and father are into drugs or whatever. And so he mentioned this and talked about it or something, and this got around the school. And next thing you know, they called him to the office, and the principal wanted to look in his backpack to suggest that apparently he had maybe brought drugs to school. And this is a lot like the thing that the police do, you know, where they ask you, you know, do you mind if I look in your trunk or if I search your car? And, you know, even when you're 14, 15, 16, even if you're on the campus of a school or a high school or a college or whatever, you're still in America and you still have rights. And people have to be aware of this. And young people have to know, they have to start to get to this idea that you don't have to necessarily cooperate and obey authority. That's, you know, a very basic kind of concept. You know, when you go to the, I remember, you know, being in school, you go to the principal's office. It's a pretty scary experience, and you know, the lockers have also been very adjudicated as well. You know, in school, kind of old school, they would give you a locker, and you keep your books there or your jacket or whatever. And I remember, you know, that was pretty normal. And they have generally some kind of a master key besides your combination. Or they have your lock and they can clip it off or whatever. I remember this, the janitor used to come around with these gigantic cutters, like the biggest plier you ever saw in your life, and it would lop right off the lock, master lock off your locker, and then they could look in or whatever. It's been generally considered that those belong to the school, and so your right to privacy in a locker may be significantly reduced. But, you know, there are also cases like this guy where they want to see inside your backpack or they want to pat you down. And generally, this is based on, you know, innuendo and so forth. And we see this thing where they talk about drug-free America and drug-free schools. A lot of schools have really gotten extremely invasive. For example, if you're an athlete, and I believe this kid is, They will give the kids urine tests or whatever for drugs. A lot of the new tests are fascinating. You know, they can take a sample of your hair, and it can go back for 6 months or a year for not just, you know, like pot or whatever, but like a whole range of possibilities. And this is something that that children and young people are more exposed to than ever. As we've talked about, you know, people live on campus. And I recall when I went to university, they had their own dormitories, but you were, you know, renting it from the school. And so, again, you're in that campus situation. You're on the campus of the school. My school and most schools have their own, like, campus security, police, whatever force. And then, of course, obviously, we have these cases now where, you know, dumbasses are drunk or whatever. They don't remember what they did with the girl. The girl says she didn't consent or whatever. Then there's obviously the issue of drugs and so forth. And, you know, it's a real disadvantage. And one of the, like I said, things that I specialized in for years was child advocacy. And, you know, I had a couple of cases, and this is really a tough one when you're young. But I had a case in particular that I recall here in California where there was this young guy, and he was charged with having marijuana at school. And there was a whole story where they got out of school early or something. They had a few periods off, and him and some of his friends went and got high or whatever. And the way it was my guy and then three of his friends, and they were all going to be expelled because of marijuana. And we went to a hearing, and just, you know, the way it was, I was representing him because his mother was smart and hired me, and the other three kids did not have lawyers, and wouldn't you know it, all three of them were found guilty of the offense the school made, and they were all expelled, didn't graduate school. And the guy that I represented, of course, because he had a lawyer and I knew what I was doing, I got him acquitted. And so he was able to finish school like a normal person and graduate. And again, this is the same kind of thing we talk about, where sometimes people don't realize it at the time, but the effect of this could be a lot more long-lasting. Whereas, you know, my guy finished school and graduated and can go on to junior college or whatever. The other three that got, you know, thrown out, who knows what happened to them? I think they probably got screwed, not just for school, but that's something that was probably going to live with them and be on their record for a long time to follow. And so it's harder, certainly, when a young person calls me. I've gotten a lot of calls even recently of young girls who are 15, 16, pregnant, their parents are crazy, stuff like that, and they want to, you know, become emancipated, or they don't want to be connected to the father of their child, or want to get child support, all kinds of crazy stuff like that. And, you know, guys in particular are usually charged with crimes, though certainly girls are getting to be very badass, and juvenile delinquency among women is much, much higher now. But again, it's the same kind of thing where they don't recognize their rights unless they have parents that are really astute. They don't hire a lawyer, and they don't have the money usually. So I definitely am doing sliding scale. When I talk to someone who's a young person, you know, I definitely am going to charge them a whole lot differently, a whole lot less, especially when they're on their own. And I try to make some accommodations for that, of course. Because, you know, they don't have a job and they don't have resources in the same way as a person might otherwise. But the impact and the effect of being charged is still quite the same. In general, exactly as we talked about with respect to the police, same kind of issues. A young person has to do the same thing. If you're on a school campus or college campus, you don't have to do the things they want. You don't have to comply. This kid was pulled out of class and they said, "Let's see inside your bag." He should have said no, because the bottom line is that he has a right to privacy. They did not have any kind of probable cause. They had heard some kind of a third or fourth party rumor. One kid said it to another kid, said it to another kid, and one of the parents of one of these kids called in. So, of course, the school administration wet themselves because a parent complained, but that's not any kind of proof. That's not kind of any kind of a valid ability to prove anything. That would not have stood up in any legal sense whatsoever. And so when they wanted to look inside his stuff, I think he complied. He didn't care because he had notebooks or whatever, so he was fine, but he really didn't have to submit to that. And I think it's really humiliating. I think it's ugly that these administrators have this kind of idea that they can do whatever they want I had a very well-known case that was on television and everything a few years ago where the kid was accused of molesting another kid. And they called the government and they called these special units from the police that investigate sex crimes. And they brought the kid to the principal's office without notifying his parents. And they had him questioned by an investigator, police officer, detective. This is a kid who was maybe 10, 11 years old. And here he is getting the third degree without having any kind of notification that he had the right to an attorney or for his parents even to be present. And later on, in retrospect, when I got involved in the case, I made a lot of complaints about the way the school had acted and the things that they had done, and they got in all sorts of trouble for, you know, violating his rights. But they don't see it, you know, in their own situation as being inappropriate. They think they have the right on their campus to do just about anything. And so a lot of these kids' rights get severely stepped on. And there's nothing more today than in respect to college. College, you know, you're a young person, but you're an adult. Usually you're over 18. And you're on a campus, which sort of is like living in a bubble in some ways. And you see how some of these kids are talking about all this nonsense with microaggression and safe spaces and all this other baloney. But the truth of the matter is you're still living in life. And at the end of whatever happens, you know, they're going to, first of all, definitely suspend you, throw you off the school, throw you out of campus. If you're paying for it, which you usually are, you're going to lose your tuition. But on the further thing is that they're going to, you know, call the police and you're going to leave in handcuffs and face not only the issue of the school discipline, but regular, you know, police and legal discipline in the legal system. And this is something that people really have to think about. And young students, you know, tend to be young and stupid and think that they're invincible and they, you know, do stupid things, which I guess is part of being young. But at the same time, you've got to think about, you know, your rights and the circumstances and everything else. There's just no getting around it. Now, Tom, I have to tell you something. We have to keep up on technology. You'll appreciate this. I had not even heard of this. I heard about this from someone who called me. A guy on the show, you know, P1 from the show, called me the other day, and he knew all about this. I thought he was crazy. I looked it up and I checked into it, and he was actually correct. Here's a guy who got a woman pregnant, someone that he was, you know, seeing on and off, the usual bullshit. I'm sorry to tell you, Tom, he was using what he called the pull-out method. Remember that one?
Oh, we talk about it all the time.
So you got to tell the boys, listen, I know it's apparently was in the Bible, so it's an old method, but it does not work, and it's never going to work. His big thing was that he didn't think he pulled out in time or something like that, but apparently that's got nothing to do with it. It's not a method. You're not going to succeed with that, and you shouldn't use it. But in any case, he was doing it that way, so of course she got pregnant. And apparently she's about, at the moment, about 3 months pregnant. And she's sharp as a nail, this girl. She's a lawyer, apparently, so she's not a dum-dum. And she told him, you know, guess what, I'm pregnant, you're the father. And he's like, bullshit, how do I know? You know, you might have been with someone else. And so I'm absolutely fascinated. Apparently, at 3 months pregnant, she did a DNA test. Now, we had heard in the past of what's called amniocentesis, which is where, and it's a little dangerous, but they can put a needle into the placenta, and they can get some of the fluid, you know, from the pregnancy area. And they can actually, you know, get some of the fetal cells and then do a test and do a DNA test. That's very invasive and it's dangerous because the needle can contaminate the pregnancy and cause a miscarriage, which in this case maybe he would have been glad about. I'm not sure. But, you know, that's something that's done later in the pregnancy, and it's usually done for a woman who's older when she wants to make sure that the developing baby doesn't have any kind of, you know, birth defects or whatever, you know, potentially. Get this. In the test that this person did, which was only after 3 months, he gave a cheek sample, which is normal. They swab your cheek. And the woman gave a blood sample, which was just regular blood from her arm. In the blood, apparently, of the woman is some of the blood cells of the fetus, which are circulating through her blood, the mother's blood, in terms of being cleaned or something like that. And in some way, they're able to separate them and to find the fetal cells. And then they can do a comparison to the potential father. And they were able to decide, in fact, that he was the father. Or they could have done the opposite. So you following this, Tom? This means that after 3 months, a woman can do a test, which is pretty uninvasive, just a blood test. And she
right.
can know whether or not the father is, you know, that father. And they can both know, obviously. After just 3 months of pregnancy. Isn't that incredible?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that is, I think that's out of sight. When you talk about these guys that have been raising kids and weren't theirs and so forth, you can really find out now, long before the birth has gone out or long before the pregnancy has become, you know, particularly involved in the first trimester, positive or negative on paternity. I think that's absolutely incredible. And it shows you how technology changed. I was reading this article about this woman who was saying that she went to the Bahamas on a trip with one of her girlfriends. And this is, you know, with the husband's permission, apparently, because she's married, of course. And she got a massage at the hotel from a masseur who, of course, she fucked, of course. And
of course.
She ended up getting pregnant by. And now she's back and she doesn't know what to tell the husband and all this because she's almost positive that it's the masseur's baby. And the masseur was a black guy. So this is kind of the nightmare of your average woman. You know, this is like, you know, this birth and the labor and the husband's all excited and out comes a black baby, you know. That's usually hard to account for. You know, I think that if it had been a white masseur and the baby was going to be more or less, you know, looking like her, looking like the husband, she probably would have, you know, tried to get it in under the wire. And this is something that women have done for, you know, millennia to fake out guys to raise a child that's not theirs. And, you know, the only way they really got in trouble was if it was actually, you know, completely different baby, where the baby came out Asian or Chinese or black or whatever, that, you know, was obvious. It wasn't possibly the father who she was saying it was. But now, as we see technology changes, and now a woman could be pregnant just early in the pregnancy and say, I know it's yours, Gary. And Gary can say, bullshit, I don't think it's mine. And they can actually do a blood test, even at that early point, and find out conclusively whether it is or it isn't. Apparently this test is more expensive than the usual DNA test, but it's still there. And, I mean, that's something that obviously is going to be more expensive now because it's new. But, you know, over time, it's going to probably get cheaper and cheaper. So the way things change in the game, it just shows you, it's absolutely incredible how things change for technology and things are always moving forward.
But some things don't change. Adam, if a woman that did that kind of amniocentesis DNA test on
right.
herself and found out that the guy she did not want to be the father was the father.
Right.
She could lie and say some other guy is the father, the guy she wants to be the father, and there were no ramifications for that at all, none.
What's interesting, Tom, is that, and this relates to a whole new area, what's called, you know, criminal law, paternity fraud. This is something now that has been made into law in some of the Asian countries, Japan and in Australia, and in some of the European countries, and this is certainly coming to the United States gradually. Where if a woman commits a fraud, where she lies to a guy, and she gets money and so forth, that she has to pay that money back, and that she has to also go to jail for defrauding a man. And this is something that women have done for a very long time without any consequences, and that's going to stop. I mean, it's just absolutely the one kind of fraud that's still permissible. And if you think about it, it's a horrible, horrible thing. I mean, you think about the impact on a man who, you know, maybe didn't want to have a kid, got surprised by a woman, and it turns out the kid wasn't even his, and he was raising it, and he's giving her money for her, you know, hospital expenses and for the birth and for the child and everything. And then it turns out the whole thing was absolutely fake. I mean, that is so twisted and disturbing. I can't even imagine the hurt and the breaking of a man's heart that he finds out that the woman was lying all along and the kid is not even genetically his. I mean, it's one thing if you want to adopt a child, fair and square, And you have the right, obviously, you can adopt a child and then you can raise a child that's not genetically yours. That's fine. But to have it imposed on you, to have it done to you where you didn't have a choice about it and you didn't get to make a decision where it was something that was done to you through, you know, fraud and lies, it's disgusting, absolutely disgusting. And when you watch these shows, I know that you're a huge fan of the Maury show, Tom.
I am.
You know, that's such a funny show to watch it, you know, just for entertainment's sake. But if you take a step back, and I know you've done this, you think about it, these are actually real people. And this is actually really happening to these people. You know, sometimes you think that it's made up or they're actors or something, but I get the impression that they're real. And here you walk in and these people are just absolutely out of their minds, going into these crazy situations that are very, very hard to believe and make absolutely, you know, that these horrible, horrible things get found out. It turns out that, you know, the kid isn't theirs and the woman lied and all the things they had done and paid and everything were all fake. I mean, it's stunning, absolutely stunning. And women do it, you know, all the time. It's something that guys have always tried to cope with. You know, what's so unbelievable today is how aware they are, how imprinted they are about these things and what they can do with these things. It's absolutely amazing that even young women are very quick. I mean, I'm amazed by some of my son's friends who are girls that are, you know, 13, 14 years old, 15 years old, and they already say, you know, that's inappropriate, and I feel exploited, and I feel raped by what you've done. And it's, you know, to hear a young girl saying it, and you know that she's just at the beginning of her power. And when she's in college or whatever, and then she's, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, if a couple of dates don't go the way she wants, or she feels rejected, or she has some kind of sexual encounter and the guy doesn't, you know, stay with her and give her all she ever wanted, she may use that spite that a woman feels and that anger that a woman feels, and who knows? She can get the ball rolling. We've seen it happen all over. It's amazing how anytime you hear these high-profile things, they're always fake. They're always fake. Every time, like the Duke lacrosse and the University of Virginia story in the Rolling Stone, there was recently a guy who claimed that at Whole Foods he had a cake made with a racist epithet on the cake or something, and he was suing them, and that turned out to also be fake. I mean, people, we talk about attention whores, but people are so nutty now to get attention and to be on television or whatever. They are perfectly willing to destroy someone's life. And there have been so many instances of young women who make a criminal charge against a guy in terms of rape or assault or whatever because they were afraid they were going to get in trouble with their parents or they needed to cover up for staying out late. And they were willing to absolutely go for the gusto and destroy someone's life over nonsense like that. And this is just the way things are now. And I guess my address tonight to young people, especially young guys in college and so forth, you got to really, really pay attention. You got to really be aware of the circumstances that you're in, and you got to make sure that you don't do a couple of stupid things in a row, and then you start getting questioned. You shut up. You get yourself a lawyer. You do not talk because it's not going to go well for you in the end. The reality is that there are so many things lined up. And expectations to be against you. In college especially, there's what's called Title IX, where the school is supposed to report things to the government and they're supposed to do things in certain ways and they face lawsuits and so forth. And I mean, it's so stacked against guys. The presumption is so strong that you're a rapist and you're a killer that if you just look at a woman wrong, you're already going to be up on charges. So you definitely have to be really aware of it, and you have to really recognize, you know, when someone's crazy. Sometimes when you meet a crazy woman, it's exciting. And, you know, I know the old line, crazy in the head is crazy in the bed. But you definitely, definitely have to recognize that this can turn against you, and you have to be able to have a sense of when it's going that way and when it's going wrong. And you have to protect yourself. That's crucial. And we have a society today where people sue each other all the time and very litigious. And what my experience has been with prosecutors, and this is really disturbing, is, you know, I've had cases where I knew my client was innocent, and I proved that he was innocent, and I showed it to the prosecutor, and they don't care. They will proceed anyway, because they have a lot of pressure on them to get these convictions, and they have what they think is evidence. It never occurs to them that the person might, you know, especially the woman, God forbid, might be lying. You know, how could you even say that? You know, to suggest that is to, you know, deny her victimhood. I saw some TV documentaries where they were interviewing these prosecutors and these investigators, and they said, we don't care what the facts are. We listen to the victim. We need to hear the victim's truth and the victim's side of the story, and we have to understand how the victim feels and the way the victim is connected to their emotions and the circumstances. And she's literally saying that she doesn't care to verify what the victim is claiming, because who cares? What's important is how she feels. So we've gone from a society of reality and facts to a vaginized society where feelings are more important than facts. And I think that's pretty much the end of the empire right there.
We're going to take a break here. We're going to come back. We got phone calls. We are here with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. A bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. I'm in New York. Adam is in Burbank at the New Normal Studios. And now it's time for your phone calls. If who knows what's happened with you? You've been charged with a DUI, a drug offense. Maybe somebody says you punched them in the gut. Maybe you've got a restraining order against you. Maybe it could be who knows what? Weed. Maybe somebody gives you something worse and you need some legal advice. You can call and talk to Adam right now at this number, 901-3000-TOM. 901-3000-TOM. That's our number. It's 901-3000-866.
Free at TomEverywhere.com. Download the Tom Likas app now. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
The Tom Likas Show. The bonus hour from New York City with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs at 901-3000-TOM. That's our number. 901-3000-TOM. Let's go. It's 901-3000-866. Jacob is right here in New York City on the Tom Likas Show with Adam Sachs. Hello, Jacob.
Hi. How's it going, guys?
Hey, Jacob.
Great.
I got a question. So when I was in college, you've probably heard this kind of thing a million times. I'm going out with this girl. I want to leave her. She Uh-oh. Makes all kinds of threats. If you ever leave me, I'll do this, I'll do that. I'll tell the professor how you plagiarized your midterm or how you plagiarized your paper,
really?
You know, which I did. You know, she's making... She's, you know, I was no angel. She's like, you know, I'll tell the cops that you have pot plants in your closet.
She knew the dirt?
She had all kinds of dirt on me. And then eventually I was like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm out. I'm breaking up with you. So what does she do?
Whoa.
You know what comes next. She goes and tells the cops that I raped her.
Oh, no. I thought you told them about the pot plants, man.
No, she wanted to go whole hog on this.
Right,
one.
Right.
So
wow.
The cops arrest me for rape.
Jesus.
Of course, you know, they arrest first and ask questions later.
That's true.
So
it's not a joke. You know, shoot first, ask questions later. It's true.
Yeah. So, and then they arrest me for fucking rape, okay? And,
Now, just before you continue, tell the guys that was horrifying, right?
I was 20 years old.
Wow.
All right? I was like... I'm 38 now, so looking back on it, not with hindsight, it was terrifying. So,
did they do it in a public way, like on the campus, or like with other
absolutely.
People?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yep. Right. It was an on-campus apartment.
Right.
They come right into, and then they put it in the school newspaper.
Oh God! And your name, your name, and not hers, of course.
Absolutely, you're exactly right. Right. So then they start the investigation. After I've been arrested, after it's in the school newspaper, then they do the investigation, then they start leaning on her. And her story, of course, doesn't add up at all. There's
right.
zero evidence. And eventually they start leaning on her a little bit, and they're like, you know, these are serious charges, and if this turns out to be fabricated, you know, we could go and charge you. So eventually she folds, and thank God these police, they did their job.
Right.
And the whole thing goes away.
Wow.
But I still had to go to court. I still had to have my name dragged through the mud. I mean, it was in the school newspaper. And
you're always that guy, right? So then even after it's dismissed and you're back in your normal life, you know, the teachers, people are looking at you, you know, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the guy.
Went around campus.
Yeah,
isn't he the
one?
She went
around
the whole campus saying that I'm a rapist, you know?
Right.
My question is, I followed the Duke lacrosse case very closely.
Right.
I played lacrosse my whole life. And these guys got multi-million dollar settlements.
Right.
Should I have went after her? And now it was 18 years ago. I'm sure that window is closed. But should I have gone after her or the school or the district attorney or something the way those guys did?
Yeah, I got to say. I mean, obviously this is a long time ago, so it may not be possible at this point in terms of statute of limitations. But you know that the prosecutor in the Duke lacrosse case was a lawyer, obviously, you know, being a prosecutor. He was disbarred in his state.
Yes, he was.
It was North Carolina.
Mike Nifong.
Yes, that's the guy. That's right.
I followed that case very closely.
So
and,
he's, you
know,
he was so out of control, he lost his license to practice law at all. And he also had to pay a lot to the guy. I think he never paid, you know, to the ones that were accused. But
yeah, these kids, they got money from the school. They got money
right.
from Duke University.
Well, you know, the stripper girl who was the accuser had, you know, nothing to give. I think she's also serving now a life sentence or something similar for murder,
as
I recall.
Yeah, she killed the guy.
Yeah, her boyfriend, of course. So she wasn't exactly Miss completely stable. But, you know, I know that when you look at the deep pocket, which is, you know, the one that actually could pay, they went after the school. And in that case, you know, it was shown that the school officials had acted very, very wrongfully. They had made comments condemning the boys before they even knew what was going on. I think they canceled the whole lacrosse season. They made some kind of thing where all the team of the lacrosse players had to give DNA samples and all this kind of stuff. I mean, they were really crazy. And when you look at the way it is now, certainly the institutions that are headed by women or have women in these positions, where they're worried about diversity and they're worried about fairness. And as I mentioned, Title IX, which is the federal law, Title IX compliance officers, you really see that the school is petrified when students start doing this. You probably said you followed the lacrosse case. You probably followed this case, and we mentioned this before on the show here, of this girl from Columbia University in New York.
Yes, I did.
Who walked around. And Tom is right up there. can stop by the campus, I think.
Yep.
That's my neighborhood. I live right around there. She walked around with a mattress.
Can you fucking believe that? I don't know what to say about that. She, you know, I think, Tom, weren't you supposed to go? Didn't your dad want you to go to Columbia? So
Columbia, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So that would have been that would have been one of your classmates, maybe. But, you know, this completely insane girl who, by the way, I'm sorry to tell you, has a mother and a father who are psychiatrists. So that should tell you something right there. A little known fact about that case. But her parents are both prominent psychiatrists in New York City. But the bottom line is, she walks around the campus with this mattress, which is the mattress that she got raped on or whatever. And this is they said this was a performance piece, like a piece of performance art. And then she actually carried it across the stage when she graduated and got her diploma. She carried the frickin' mattress. But
here's the thing with that: don't forget, Columbia made sure to publicize the guy's name.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah, of course.
They made sure to drag his name through the mud.
Yeah, of course. And by the way, her name was protected even though she was seeking publicity. And what's amazing is she got college credit for her performance piece, which was this carrying this frickin' mattress. And then she actually made a video of herself reenacting the rape. Did you see that? Literally having sex with a guy naked. She's actually completely naked and then having sex with a guy who's supposed to be playing the part of the rapist. And the bottom line is, I mean, you see how the school is, you know, she becomes like untouchable. They're afraid of her. So on some level, they want to keep it all quiet. They don't want to hurt the reputation of the school. What's really interesting in the case where you had Ferguson, in Missouri about a year or two ago, where there was supposedly racism on campus, and this black student was on a hunger strike, and all these things that happened that were supposedly actually not true. But what ended up happening at that school is the enrollment is way, way down. The donations from alumni, which are graduates of the school, is way, way down. And the school is actually going to have to start cutting back programs because they're having less and less donations and less students. And I think that a school like Duke, it had been, you know, hurt very much in the reputation sense because of that incident. And so the way they handled it was very stupid. And as you saw, like you said, the boys that were the students there that were the victims of these ridiculous statements by the administrators long before they knew what was going on ended up making it possible for the students to get judgments against the school, in the, as you said, in the millions and millions of dollars. Now, what you just described, I don't know exactly how your school reacted. Obviously, you know, your reputation was harmed in the school paper or whatever. But you may have been able to get some kind of relief and judgment, particularly from the girl making a false accusation. But, you know, what is she, 16, 18, 20? She doesn't have any money. Just a stupid
idiot. Yeah, I was
20.
You know? She was 21.
Yeah, so what's terrifying about these things in terms of young women today is literally they have nothing to lose. You know, it's a very big deal, and I've talked about this too, you know, many times on the show, this great inequity between the two sides, where the accused person has their life destroyed, and the person who makes the accusation, it costs them nothing. You know, they have no issue. They just go in. They have all these counselors helping them, and the person who's accused has to hire a lawyer, has to get investigators, has their life turned upside down. So this great inequality between the two sides, I think, is naturally corrupting. Because from her point of view, you know, as a young girl, it's exciting. People are paying attention to her. You know, she's getting revenge on you. You know, women are very vindictive. I think this is a real vessel for her vindictiveness. And in the end, she goes, oops, oh, maybe it wasn't true, and walks away clean. And the guy's life in the meantime is completely ruined. And what you've described, I mean, obviously you're looking at it 20 years ago or whatever. I can only imagine how disturbing this must have been for you, particularly at the time, where it's probably something you couldn't think about anything else for like months and months, right? And it's like,
yeah.
Did you ever think of killing yourself? I mean, it's horrible.
I remember that night sitting in that holding cell. Just, I mean, I was, I was kind of like a hell-raising kind of teenager. But,
which is normal, by the way. You're allowed to be a hell-raising teenager. See, I don't think you have to apologize for that. You know.
Yeah, there's a difference between sitting in a holding cell for underage possession of beer than you're when you're in the holding cell charged with rape. I mean, it was just mind-blowing. So.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you sharing the story. It's so upsetting. I don't know what to tell you. It's crazy.
All right, Jacob, thank you so much. 901-3000 Tom, that is our telephone number. We're here with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. This is free legal advice for you. 901-3000 Tom. You can call us right now. 901-3000-866.
Serving the universe from an old laundromat in Burbank. 901-3000 Tom. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show. The bonus hour with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. I'm in New York City. Adam is in Burbank. And now your phone calls continue at 901-3000 Tom. That's our number. Adam, tell everybody how they can get in touch with you.
Well, you can call me toll-free at 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. You know, I answer my phone. People are always amazed. They say to me, well, you're going to give this message to Adam. I'm like, you know, you're talking to Adam right now. No, you're kidding me, man. No way.
Yep.
Check me out, www.adamlawyer.com at the internet, also Facebook. And send me an email, adam@adamlawyer.com.
901-3000, Tom. Charles in San Diego. You're on the Tom Likas Show with Adam Sachs.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Adam.
Hey, Charles.
I got a speeding ticket today.
Uh-oh. Bad boy.
Oh,
what happened? Tell us the story.
Okay, I was moving over from the fast lanes to the slower lanes so I could exit the freeway. And a motorcycle cop lit me up, pulled off the freeway to a safe place, roll down my windows, get my hands on the steering wheel. I wasn't a jerk. I was nice to the cop, gave him all my information. He goes, he comes back with a ticket, and he takes my license and stuff. And then I took my cell phone and I placed it in the cup holder of my truck, pointed out towards that window, just catch anything that I thought would be of value later.
Right.
So when he comes back with the ticket, I asked him, where does it say how fast I was going? He said, down there at the bottom. Okay, well, he wrote down here at the bottom, 86, and the max speed was 65.
Whoa. But I thought you said that you were slowing down, if anything. You were coming out to go off.
That's right. I was trying to get off the freeway. I don't think 86 is right. If anything, fastest I was going was 75.
You know, there's another thing you could have done, and you could have asked him, you know, how he determined that. It's going to be marked on the ticket, whether he's paced you or whether he used radar. Did he notice something like that on the ticket? Does it say how he got this number?
It does say radar. He marked it for radar, and he circled it, and he put some other notation
next to
that.
All right, so you're ready for this?
And I got
one for you. No, seriously, you can ask him to see to show you the radar machine.
Which I did.
Oh, good, okay.
Which I did, and he said, no, I won't show it to you.
Really?
And I said, please. Yes. I said, please, and he said, no, I don't do that.
Okay.
And so I caught this on video, and I have proof of this happening on video.
Okay.
As soon as I got home, I called a guy that works with me that fights tickets, and then I called some other guys I found on Yelp. And then I also called a lawyer who I have history with dealing with some traffic accidents from maybe 10 years ago. And I'm getting all kinds of different answers. The lawyer, the actual lawyer I've talked to, says that he can't find anything saying that the cop has to show me radar. Articles online are saying that he does have to show me radar, and I'm confused.
Okay.
I don't know whether he has to show me
radar. I'll tell you the answer. No. First of all, I can do this for you, of course. I don't know who you're calling. I don't know if they know what they're doing or whatever. I certainly would take this for you if you want. It's a winnable one. I mean, there are some that are hopeless, you know. This is something that you could succeed with. What the law says, generally speaking, is that the cop does not have to show it to you. When this cop said to you, whatever, oh, I don't do that, that's fine. He doesn't have to, but he can, and it's something that they usually do. You have to remember, theoretically, I know this is going to be hard to believe, but cops are doing community policing, which means that they're not your enemy. They're protecting you. And so you're supposed to be in a cooperative situation with a cop. Now, if he's citing you for a ticket, you say, officer, I'd really like to see the radar. He should say, well, sure, citizen, no problem. Here it is, you know? And so that is something that I would raise in front of the judge. I would say, look, if anything, my client, that's you, was going off the highway, the freeway, was slowing down. There's no way he was doing 86, you know, coming off the speed, weaving, you know, between other cars trying to get over to the exit from the fast lanes. If anything, he was going to be, you know, decelerating and going at a much lower rate of speed. And then when he asked the officer to show him the radar, he refused. The officer, for no reason, said, I'm not going to show it to you, which puts doubt on the reading. And, you know, you have to raise the specter of doubt, and that's enough to get a ticket dismissed. So you've got a nice defensible situation. If you want to send me a copy of your ticket and your driver's license, I think I can get on it for you. But it's good that you're doing the right thing. Your instinct is to fight it, which I think is good. Most people just, you know, quietly take it up the ass and pay the ticket. I think it's smart to fight. And, you know, I think that obviously you can't guarantee an outcome. But it sounds like you're in a pretty good defensible position, and you yourself are saying there's no way you were doing 86. And if it was 65, you know, that's a little bit of a range. You know, you just a little touch of the brake, and you go from whatever you were doing to a much slower rate, especially if you were leaving the freeway. And I think that's a believable story, and you just have to present it correctly in a court. Now, this thing you're doing where you're sort of talking to your friends and talking to people you know and talking to your friend who's a lawyer and stuff, you know, a lot of people think they want to do that and kind of get a consensus, but sometimes that's just frustrating because you end up hearing all these different opinions, you know?
Yeah.
different and conflicting, I might add. So sometimes that isn't necessarily the research that's going to help you.
Okay.
But I love finding tickets. There's no reason to pay extra. I really think you pay enough taxes to the city and the state and federal government already.
I agree. I'm going to send you an email, Adam, and if, Tom, you could check me out, Thomas Kelly, I'd appreciate it.
You bet I can. Here you go.
Did you just fuck with him?
All right.
Fuck.
Roll on your stomach. Roll on your stomach. Oh. 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 God. No. No.
901-3000 Tom.
That's the worst, man.
Yeah, it is. Jesus. I don't know why they keep asking for it, but they do.
It's twisted, that's why.
901-3000-866. Here we are with Adam Sachs, and here we are with Octavio on the Tom Likas Show. Hello.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Adam. How are you?
Hey, Octavio. How are you?
Great.
Good. Hey, I got a question related to the guy that called on Friday on WAP about, I mean, being... he was kicked out of his place.
Yeah, who could forget that one? That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the whole thing got me thinking.
You know, I talked to him. I talked to him over the weekend. He called me. But what a mess
good.
He made of his life. God.
Wow. Good. Good that you're helping him. So I got curious about the whole thing. And it got me thinking about, I mean, what if, I mean, if I put some cameras in my place, I don't know, some sort of surveillance thing.
So you don't mean, this is not even surveillance for the outside. You want surveillance for the inside.
Right. So turn it on in case I bring a woman in.
Right.
Not to, I mean, just to be sure that nothing crazy happens. So if she brings up, a ridiculous thing, like I hit her or whatever she come up with, can I use it?
Well, you know, you're allowed to film yourself. You necessarily filming her inside your house without telling her, that could be a big problem, especially if you're filming sex or whatever. But if she says that you hit her, how can you prove that you didn't? You know, which footage would this be? You have footage showing everything normal probably, but, you know, how would you show that you have the footage to disprove? It's very, very difficult to, prove a negative. Where someone says, this thing today where they say, you're a racist or Trump's a racist or, you're a sexist. You know, you hate black people. And you say, well, no, I don't. You know, how can you prove that you're not? So if she says that you were abusive, this is what women say. They say, he was emotionally abusive. He was controlling. And then, on several occasions, he pushed me or hit me. Just because you have some, hours of video, she can claim that you hit her, when the camera wasn't on or in a room that the camera didn't cover or whatever. So that doesn't prove that you didn't do something.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I mean, she said that. I mean, it happened, I don't know, this time of hour, around this time, and I played a video this time.
I understand. I think that broadly speaking, what Tom has said to the guys is generally correct. You really can't have them in your house. It's just not
right.
Safe.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to avoid the whole thing in the first place.
It's not a joke. It sounds crazy. I mean, you invite a woman over and whatever. I mean, that's pretty obvious. But generally speaking, you saw this guy. I mean, I think the gentleman from last week. I think he got involved literally with a grifter. He got involved with a woman that lived in a hotel room, and she was sort of drifting from thing to thing. And I think that she sort of ingratiated herself into his life so that she could, stay over a couple of nights at his place to claim residence and move in and then to have him kicked out so that she could then, sell his possessions. And then by the time, it turned around and she eventually had to leave a few months later, that she would have stripped him bare of everything that she could get and then just sort of move on to her next victim. And I think this is what, this is what vampires do, right? They drink all the blood they can. and then they're done. And I think that's exactly what you saw. And I'm not sure, how carefully you can be to get, and avoid a woman like that. You definitely have to pay attention to red flags. And when she's bragging to you about how she fucked over her ex-husband and her ex-boyfriends are all in jail because of her, and she's living in a hotel or a motel, and she doesn't seem to have a regular job, and she doesn't seem to have a regular lifestyle of any kind, and she talks about having, gone to jail a few times or whatever. I mean, these are all red flags that guys have ignored when they were hot to screw a chick, You have to really pay attention.
Right. If I hear that, I just have to press the eject button at that instant. Get out. Just run.
Right.
Yeah. I think that guys, unfortunately, when they tell me the story in retrospect, they will say, I had a feeling that it wasn't right. I knew she was crazy. I knew some of this, some of the things that she was doing didn't make sense. And so you have to listen to that. That's not just a joke. That's your instincts talking to you. And broadly speaking, if you don't know someone too well, you don't bring them to your house. go to her place, as Tom has always said.
Yeah.
You know, you're
no
a lot
need
safer.
Them over your place.
It's not a joke. The whole circumstances of consent and in her situation in terms of, you know, making complaint against you are going to be a lot different if, for example, the sex is at her place. The cops are going to say to her, what, you invited him into your place and then he raped you? Give me a break. You know, that changes the whole circumstance as opposed to you taking her to your place and drugging her, you know, in an environment that you control. You know, it's going to be a lot more believable that she was the victim rather than you.
Octavio, thank you as always. Appreciate the call. Adam, once again, how can people get in touch with you?
Certainly call me toll-free, 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. And send me an email, which I love. I answer personally, adam@adamlawyer.com.
All right. You know, Adam is here every Tuesday with a bonus hour here on the Tom Likas Show. He will return next Tuesday live at 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time.
Tom Likas, the Internet's most listened to call-in show. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
From the New Normal Newsroom, it's news for guys. I'm Gary Zeno.
Better believe it.
Tejano star Emilio Navira, dead at 53.
This was a shocker to many.
Navira. I think we've pronounced this like five different ways today. But I've been told it's Navira, so.
Well, we got the Emilio part nailed. I mean,
well, yeah,
that wasn't
the
issue.
We got it down cold. Yeah.
But apparently our friend Emilio was good friends with Selena.
Mm-hmm.
Who basically performed together, and he was considered like the Garth Brooks of Tejano music. So this guy is a San Antonio native. He won a Grammy.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? If you're being
lumped in with
Garth Brooks,
we don't know who Garth Brooks is, but you know, in country music, everybody does. That's the point here. He's a huge star.
I'm with you. I'm not putting this guy down. I'm putting Garth Brooks down.
I am too, but unfortunately for all of us, Garth Brooks made a fortune and is known worldwide.
Yeah.
I can't name one song.
Yeah, it doesn't much matter.
Not
he's laughing all the way to the bank.
I'm dead serious.
We're
not
here
one.
Mispronouncing names. So there you have
right.
it. Yeah. Work out. Ciara apparently losing big in custody court yesterday.
Yeah, she went for sole custody. She claimed that her baby daddy, Future, I forget the dude's real name, but it's not Future, obviously. She claimed he was a bad parent who was not present in the child's life. She and her lawyer basically trash-talked Future to the judge, saying that he's a bad person. And Future did show up. He asked for joint custody, and the judge was square on his side, right. Rejecting all of Sierra's arguments.
Yeah.
And the courts in California usually favor joint custody, so the decision went in line with what the law is. Nice try, Sierra. It didn't work.
By the way, if there's not an R&B band called Soul Custody, there should be.
S-O-U-L?
Right.
It's Soul.
Soul Custody. Custody. You understand where I'm coming from?
Soul custody.
The Washington Redskins' newly signed tight end Vernon Davis accused by his fiance of cheating on him with a 20-year-old, and this all happened on social media. Which is really not cool if you're Vernon.
No, but it says in the post, when you give a man all your 15 years, three kids, and you sacrifice your life, and he cheats on you with 20-year-old chow and lies on you.
Child, she says. She actually calls
a child.
Brought it.
But she, obviously, 20 is not a child, but Vernon getting called out.
Hashtag, you're a liar and a cheater.
Yeah. By the way, also on social media, I didn't get a chance to send this to you yet. The Fordham University basketball coach's wife sent out a tweet that her husband is cheating.
Oh, no.
Also.
Yes, I see.
It went right to Twitter and says, 22-year marriage over when Jeff met a gold digger in Prague on a train.
Oh, that sounds like
and
a
she
dream.
Said, working at a Catholic university doesn't mean you have morals.
Oh, no. Yeah, there's no way to hide that once that happens.
She also says, breaking the silence, never thought Fordham head coach Jeff would lie or cheat on me, but today it all comes out with the story on Martina.
Yeah, holy shit. Crazy story out of New Orleans about a guy in a Lamborghini.
Yeah.
Apparently he had an 18-year-old girl with him. He was trying to impress her. He was just a tiny bit drunk. I think he was a .11, I think. Something about that. He was doing 118 miles an hour.
.11, you're right.
When he drove into a wall.
Yeah.
He was not wearing a seatbelt. She was in the passenger seat. He was ejected, and it apparently saved his life. She is DED dead. 118 miles an hour.
You know, if this was a blonde-haired girl, this sounds a lot like my dream when I win the lottery. Right. Getting a Lamborghini
showing off.
My blood alcohol level would be 0.0. We'll have lots of the cocaine.
Two things. We got a vid alert and a pig alert. A vid alert, you have to check this out. It's out of Philadelphia. It's a drunk guy ejected from a club. He goes outside. He's been troned out, and he's sitting on a curb. He gets back up. He goes back up to the bouncer, says, guess what? Here's the thing. You take a swing at me. If you miss me, I get to go back in. The bouncer takes a swing.
And guess what? He didn't miss.
Oh, I don't know that I've seen a knockout so, like, stone cold.
This guy turns into, like, you know, it's like rigor mortis hit him. Yeah. Before he even hit the ground, he was just froze up. Boom.
Yeah, yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's a true knockout.
Yeah. And check out the pick alert of Candace Swanepoel. We all know that she's pregnant. Now we really know she's pregnant. She's the latest celebrity now to take a picture topless with her big pregnant belly and the hand bra thing going on at the same time.
Yeah.
This is the way she chose to announce that she's having a boy. A boy. And by the way, check in 1 year from now. She will be back to, like,
unbelievable
awesomeness.
Fighting weight.
But right now, she looks a little more like me.
By the way, no. Let's not go that far.
No, I'm talking about the belly.
Oh. Yeah.
Plenty more news for guys.com. And of course, you can find our podcast at GaryandDino.com. From the New Normal Studios in Burbank, we're back to the Tom Likas Show right after this.
This is the New Normal.
Soul custody.